Rosalina has just begun working at a migrant camp with her parents, when before long, a swarm of small, bee-like machines start following her wherever she goes, sparking a media sensation. Here is Mariposa de Hierro, read and written by Matt McHugh.
Rosalina noticed the shadows first. Walking from the school trailers back to the migrant camp, she saw a moving pattern surround her own elongated shadow on the path bordering the farm. She thought it was just passing clouds, but as the patterns grew denser, overlapping in chaotic waves, she turned and looked up. Leaves? Flower petals? Butterflies, maybe. A flock of somethings descended toward her. They looked like dandelion seeds, but much bigger. Each had a shimmering saucer-shaped disc at the top and a stalk the size of a drinking straw hanging down, with a dark tip at the bottom. One fluttered. No, it was not fluttering, but spinning, like a toy paper helicopter, close enough to touch. Rosalina put out her hand and let the dark tip rest on her open palm. It had the soft, raspy feel of a paintbrush as the bristles danced over her skin. The rotating flaps, frosty silver with rainbow colors glinting at the edges, began to spin just a bit faster. The copter stalk rose again, nudging upward through the flock. One by one, they descended, brushed Rosalina's hand, then rose as hundreds hovered, waiting their turn. They surrounded her, whipping the air into a breeze across her face. Rosalina was not exactly afraid. Few 8-year-olds were as stoic as she, but unnerved enough to back away. The swarm parted and immediately closed again. She took a few steps back, scampered to one side, then the other. The flock was easily outpaced, but squashed and stretched and continued to track her like a cloud of mist with a mind of its own. Rosalina jogged the remaining half mile back to her parents' cabin tent. Inside the cabin, she read a note left by her mother and sliced plantain and soaked beans as pre-prep for dinner. More than once, she glanced through the vinyl window sheet, at first disappointed to see no trace of the flock, then thrilled to spy them gathering above the camp. At sundown, when the adults returned from the fields, they squinted at the mass overhead. It wasn't until Rosalina came out that the things once more descended and began to tickle her, and only her, with their brush tips. One of the copters clipped the brim of someone's hat, and it dropped to the ground. It buzzed like a wounded locust, and a woman instinctively stomped it. A man picked up the crushed thing and inspected it before declaring, "Es de plástico." Rosalina's father, Arturo, claimed the object and took it inside the family's cabin. A curious group crammed the small dwelling to capacity. They had to shut the door to keep the copters out, so dozens of faces had to peep through the windows. The assembly watched as her father sliced the stalk with a box cutter and carefully lifted out its innards. He extracted cylinders of intricate mesh, dark and shiny like pencil lead, wrapped in spirals of copper wire no thicker than a human hair. Dozens of tiny hexagons, the size of sesame seeds, were tightly fitted in a ring below the saucer flaps. "Es una máquina," said her father. "What's that, Poppy?" asked Rosalina, pointing to a green shard etched with lines of gold. Her father held the piece up like a matchstick. "It looks like a computer chip." "What's it for?" someone asked. "See those little hexes?" one of the men pointed. "Those look like insect eyes. I bet they're cameras, spying on us to see if we're working." Murmurs went around the group. Arturo remained skeptical. "They've got foremen and daily quotas for that. Why make hundreds of spy bots just to watch us in the fields?" Again, the group muttered a Spanish-English mix as pockets of argument formed around the room. Rosalina heard the voice of her mother, Sylvia, rise over the ruckus. "Why were they following Rosie?" The group fell silent. "It's a pollinator," said the migrant boss, seated at his desk in the office trailer. When the mystery of the spy copters had stumped the camp collective, Rosalina's father took it to the manager. He only glanced for a moment before answering. "How do you know?" asked Arturo. "Because yesterday we got this." The boss turned his laptop toward Rosalina's father. On screen, it showed a photo of one of the objects, with lines and labels pointing to the flaps, eyes, stalks, and brushes. Some tech company is developing these to act like bees. Supposedly, they were experimenting a few counties over when a windstorm blew a bunch away. There was a message on the agribusiness listserv saying to be on the lookout. Technically, any new farm automation has to be approved by the state labor board and beekeepers' unions. Where did you find this?
They followed my daughter.
Rosalina stepped from behind her father and gave a shy wave to the boss. The heavyset white man nodded and said, "Hello." Then looked to Arturo. "What do you mean they followed her?"
"Espera aquí,"
he said to Rosalina, then waved for the boss to follow him. The two men left the trailer and shut the door. Rosalina stood alone, shivering in the overcranked air conditioning, until she heard her father's voice.
"Salora!"
She opened the door and walked down the three wooden steps. Her father and the boss were standing 20 paces away, the white man looking up at the hovering horde of copters. Rosalina stopped and spread her arms wide. Slowly, they descended until she was surrounded by them, crowding around to tickle her skin with their brushes. The boss stared, wide eyes and open mouth, then said,
"Well, that is the damnedest thing."
The next day, as Rosalina walked to the school trailers, the copters trailed along. A cluster of other children from the camp encouraged Rosalina to run back and forth, laughing as the flock chased her. It was the most interaction she'd had with others her age so far this season, and being a center of attention for once was fun. After lessons, the group kept demanding she call down the brush tips. A few boys gleefully swatted copters or crushed them midair with hand claps. Rosalina scolded them. She knew they were only machines, but hurting them just seemed mean, and she shooed the copters back up out of reach. The children sulked, having their sport spoiled, and set off to find other mischief. All sorts of vehicles came and went in a farm during a season, but the vans with long poles now parked by the camp were definitely unusual. Rosalina recognized them as TV news vans, even before a blonde woman with a microphone ran up on teetering heels. Soon, reporters with perfect teeth and immaculate clothes surrounded her, each accompanied by a stocky cameraman in t-shirt and jeans. The boss from the trailer was there along with her parents. The reporters called her parents Mr. and Mrs. and asked if they could speak to their daughter. Her father and the boss both said yes. Rosalina's mother leaned down and whispered,
"Está bien, mijita. Sí, es okay, mama."
They all started asking, "When did they start following you?" and "Why did they start following you?" in different ways. Rosalina answered "yesterday" and "I don't know" to each in turn. All questions stopped, however, when Rosalina has stood in place long enough for the copters to catch up. Rosalina had discovered that if she waved her hands like a conductor, the copters would move like a marching band. When she spun like a ballerina, it sent slow-motion tornadoes spiraling through the swarm. The reporters positioned themselves in the foreground as the cameraman took aim at the glittering patterns. Rosalina was laughing, dancing with the flock, when a black SUV pulled up along the dirt road. A man in a dark suit emerged and went straight to the white boss. They shook hands and spoke quietly. The boss pointed to Rosalina's parents, and the dark suit man shook their hands.
"Is there somewhere we can talk?"
he said to her father. Inside the family tent cabin, the man sat at the table and accepted a cup of iced tea from her mother before turning to Rosalina.
"Hi,"
he said. He put out a hand. He was black, not dark, with more age lines in his face than her father had, and a few curlicues of gray in his hair. His fingers were incredibly long. When Rosalina shook his hand, they wrapped completely around hers.
"My name's Jay Caldwell. I work for the company that makes the, He twirled his fingers. We're Macrodeek.
We're Mac who?
No, that's our company name. We are Macrodeek. Macrodeek. It means big talk or something like that. I'm not really a fan of it, to be honest, but nobody ever asked my opinion. We make your cell phone.
I don't have a cell phone, said Rosalina.
Well, just between you and me, that's probably a good thing. For every problem they solve, they cause two. Your name? It's Rosalina?
Yes.
That's a pretty name. I knew someone named that once. We called her Rosie.
I like Rosie. You can call me that.
Rosie it is. And you can call me Jay. Rosie, the flying things following you. Do you know what they are?
Pollinators.
Do you know what that means?
They're like robot bees.
Jay smiled. Exactly. Bees fly from flower to flower, picking up and dropping little grains of pollen. Without that mixing of pollen, fruits and nuts won't grow. Over time, pesticides and other human things have reduced the number of bees, so we're trying to come up with alternatives. He reached inside his jacket pocket and took out one of the copters. He spun it in his fingers, and it hovered midair. So these guys fly around all day. They have a ring of electric eyes, but the world is completely dark to them, except for ultraviolet light reflected from flower petals. The only thing they can see are flowers, glowing like stars in the sky, and they're drawn to the glow. They come down, rub their bristles on one, then move on to the next, over and over. They never get tired. They never stop working. Except, he blew at the copter. It bobbed in the breeze and began slowly circling the room. They're vulnerable to wind. A few days ago, we were testing these at a strawberry farm, when a storm blew them away. They're very simple, but like real bees, they have a kind of homing beacon. If they get lost, they're supposed to come back to their launch stations. It's like an artificial hive. Anyway, these didn't come back. Again, he reached into his pocket, this time taking out a tiny green and gold stick, just like her father had found. Each one has a little computer brain with basic instructions. Like any software, it can get muddled and need a reboot. So that's what we did. Told them to reboot to their original program. The first part of that is find your hive. For real bees, the hive is wherever the queen is. A lot of creatures do something called imprinting, where they instinctively recognize their leader. Bees imprint on the queen. He gently took Rosalina's hand and turned it palm up. He held his palm next to hers. Everyone watched as the copter fluttered back. It ignored Jay Caldwell's enormous hand and settled its brush tips on hers. For some reason, Rosie, our robot bees think you're their queen. I'm here to figure out why. Rosalina spent the day with a group of white-coated technicians, going in and out of different trailers with all sorts of scanners and screens. They asked her a lot of strange questions. Do you think flowers are prettier than most people? Do you dream of falling or flying more often? Does the smell of honey trigger any memories? And they shine colored lights in her eyes, all the while making notes on their tablets. Cruz followed her around and made her retrace every step she'd taken for the last week. They blew the copters away with gigantic fans, then timed how long they took to return. They even poked her with a needle and drew blood. She was scared at the idea, but they put on a cartoon for her to watch, and it was over before she knew what happened. It was exciting at first. After hours and hours, it stopped being fun. She told her parents at dinner, and her father went to talk to Jay. Jay took him aside, and they spoke quietly. As they whispered, she heard the word compensation. Her father came back and told her it would only be a little longer. The tests continued for a second day, with some new ones, but many of the same repeated. The TV people had all left, and the other children in the camp continued to go to school and run around playing without her, like always. Her parents and the other adults returned to the fields,
the harvest waits for nothing. The copters had stopped following her because the Macrodique people caught them all. They used what looked like giant picnic umbrellas, upside down and opened wide. When the copters swarmed near, they closed like a Venus flytrap.
"Those are the hives," said Jay. "They put the pollinators into a dormant state."
"Do you know why they were following me?" she asked.
"I think so," he replied. "We need to check a few more things, but it's starting to make sense. Once we're sure, my boss wants me to call a press conference. You've gone viral, as they say."
Jay showed Rosie his phone. There were videos of her spinning and running through the fields with the copters following. News people talked on screen about the little migrant queen. In the corner was a thumbs-up symbol and a number that counted higher every few seconds.
"You're going to leave and take them with you?" she asked.
"Yes," said Jay.
"Will they come back?"
"Not if I've done my job right. Do you wish they would?"
Rosie shrugged.
"They kind of feel like my friends now."
"Don't you have friends here? What about the other kids?"
"I don't really know them. We just got here at the start of harvest, and after it's over, we'll take a bus to another farm. There'll be other kids at the new farm, but we won't stay there either. Could I have one to keep when you go?"
"I'm sure I can arrange that. I'll say it's a follow-up experiment."
He squatted down to look Rosalina in the eye.
"It must be hard, going from place to place all the time."
"It's just what we do," she answered. "I like school, but sometimes there's not one, so I have lessons with Mama after dinner. Papa says in a few years I can work on the farms, too. Can I ask a question?"
"Of course."
"Do you have a house?"
"I do."
"Is it big?"
Jay laughed. "Oh, yes. Much bigger than I need, but you know what they say. Happy wife, happy life."
"I wish I had a big house."
"Maybe someday you will."
Jay smiled, but he looked sad. Just then, a man in a white coat came up. "Mr. Caldwell, the report's ready. Do you want to review it before it goes to headquarters?"
"I'll be right there."
Jay stood up.
"You know, I was thinking, what would you say if I had a party tonight? Like a big cookout for everybody in the camp. Maybe some music or a show."
"Can you do that?"
asked Rosalina.
"It's the least I can do."
The party was great. People in trucks came and set up tables and lights. There was a barbecue and ice cream and booths with games. A band played on stage and a magician walked around and did tricks with cards and coins. When it got dark, there was a show with light-up drones making pictures in the sky. It was the best day Rosalina ever had. At the end, Jay came up and asked her if she had fun. Her heart was so full she couldn't think of anything to say, so she just hugged him. Jay handed Rosalina a present, wrapped in shiny gold paper with a red bow.
"I asked your mom and dad, and they said it was okay for me to give you this."
Inside was a gleaming black and silver tablet. When she touched it, the screen glowed like a rainbow, and a voice said,
"Hola, Rosalina." "Maybe that can help when you have lessons with your mom," he said.
He reached out and touched the screen. A little circle with a picture of his face appeared.
"That's me. You just tap that and it goes right to my phone. Anytime you need anything, call me."
"Do I have to plug it in to keep it working?"
Jay laughed. "That's 100% battery-free to lifetime wireless data and power. Macrodique's great contribution to the planet."
"Thank you so much," she said. "You're the nicest person I ever met."
"I doubt that very much, but thank you for saying so. It was an honor to meet you, Rosie. You take care of your mom and dad, okay? And don't forget to have fun when you can."
"I will. I promise."
This time, Jay hugged her. She heard him sniffle once before he stood up, patted the top of her head, then walked away. The next morning, the news vans came back. The booths and tables from the party were gone, but the stage was still there, with rows of chairs for the reporters. Rosalina stood in the back, watching from behind a line of chubby cameramen, as Jay went up on stage. He leaned toward a microphone at a podium, and his voice emerged from the loudspeakers.
Bee colony collapse disorder has been a problem for decades. Pesticides, pollutants, parasites, mutating fungal and viral strains, these factors have placed varying levels of stress on insect populations, which are in themselves a major indicator of ecosystem health. The automated pollinators developed by Macrady, using our patented wireless power grid, are designed to be a sustainable solution to help food production meet global demand without...
Do you have permits from the State Agriculture Board to deploy these robots?
Called out someone from the audience.
We haven't deployed anything, answered Jay. The units you saw were part of a testing program, sponsored in partnership with...
These so-called robot bees,
yelled another spectator.
They're toxic to birds and animals, aren't they?
If eaten, yes. To discourage predation, we've designed them to emit a subsonic...
Someone else interrupted.
Isn't it true Macrodique is planning to take over farms just like you've done with telecommunications and transportation, not to mention your complete dominance of high-end cloud computing?
Different people scattered throughout the audience got on their feet and started screaming at Jay. One man, without either a camera or a microphone, stood on a chair and held up a sign that said in blood-dripping Dracula letters,
Macrodique equals death!
Jay tried to talk over the noise, but it just got louder. In the middle of the chaos, Rosalina noticed a shadow darken the ground. She looked up and saw a speck in the sky. There was a high-pitched whine, like the squeal of cicadas, as the shape got closer. The sound grew louder and gave off wind like a storm, blasting the reporter's neat hair and clothes. The thing came down beside the stage as gently as a balloon. It had a smooth black shell arched in the middle and four shimmering discs that bobbed as it descended. Spindly legs unfolded from its belly as it touched the ground. The shell cracked open with a hiss and stairs rolled out like a tongue. A man in a dark suit came down the stairs. He was tall, white, with thick hair piled in high and perfect style, except for one curl that hung over his forehead. She'd seen his face before, on TV, but didn't know his name. All the reporters did, though.
Darhenny!
They surged toward him, knocking over chairs in their hurry. Darhenny gave an enormous grin and waved as the crowd grounded around him like groupies. He hopped onto the stage and waited as the reporters again took their seats. Even the ones who had screamed at Jay now sat quietly. When Darhenny began to speak, his voice came from the loudspeakers, even though Rosalina didn't see him holding any kind of microphone.
Ladies, gentlemen, everyone, thank you for coming. For those of you who don't know me, I'm Ed Darhenny, he/him, founder of Macrodique Technology. And let me start by saying, I hear you. I hear your concerns about burdensome regulation. I hear your concerns about the environment and infrastructure and the security of our food production, and they are valid all and shall be addressed each in turn. But I'm here today to talk to about something much more important. Slavery.
Darhenny's smile melted into a serious scowl. He pointed toward the fields.
All throughout this so-called land of the free are millions of migrant farm workers that form the backbone of the agribusiness beast that puts food on American tables. They come here to do the jobs none of us want, working all day at things we couldn't tolerate for an hour. We grow fat on the labor of those we shackle to starvation wages. There's a word for that, a word history should have long ago swept aside. But we keep layering a new veil over it that allows us to look away in comfort. This is not the world I want to live in. This is not the world I founded Macrodique Technology 20 years ago to help build. Human innovation can better the human condition, but only if we have the courage to look truth in the face. Rosalina Alvarez,
Where are you?
The crowd murmured, looked around. Slowly, people noticed her and stood back, parting to create a wide path from herself in the back to Darhetty up front.
Please, if you would do me the honor, come up here, said Darhetty.
Rosalina felt the burn of everyone watching her. With no idea what else to do, she walked up the aisle as faces and cameras tracked her in trembling silence until she came to the edge of the stage. Darhetty reached down, took her hand, and hoisted her up.
This girl lives a life you or I would find unendurable. Dawn to dusk in the fields that feed you and yours. And when tiny, helpless machines, devastatingly simple creatures that know nothing but to seek the next task, when they got lost, they found her. Literal worker bees recognized this little girl as kindred, as their queen. If that doesn't shock us from complacency, I don't know what can.
On cue, a line of white-jacketed scientists paraded out and stood in front of the stage.
These are the team leads from our apionic and horticultural automation departments. They can answer all your questions in detail. We have an information tent set up with presentations, press packets, and, not that any of us really deserve them, refreshments. If you would follow them now, please, I'll be along momentarily.
The scientists walked off in a line, and the reporters bunched up to follow. Rosalina noticed the ones who had been screaming at Jay before went the other way. Darhetty squatted down to look Rosalina in the eye.
I apologize for calling you up here in front of everyone. I hope it wasn't too uncomfortable. In any case, thank you very much for all your help.
I didn't really do anything.
Darhetty chuckled. Jay told me you were a bright kid. I know things can be hard for people like you and your family, but don't worry. I'll take it from here.
Okay.
Jay Caldwell and Ed Darhetty sat facing each other in padded recliners within the belly of the Macrodique hovercraft. As it ascended, Caldwell looked out the window over the sprawling fields, dotted with bent workers tossing leaves into lumbering crawlers. In a dusty path by the information tent stood Rosalina Alvarez, waving goodbye.
You know what you said back there was bullshit, said Caldwell.
You're going to have to narrow that down to be meaningful, replied Darhetty.
Really? All of it. But let's start with the part about the robot bees recognizing Rosie as kindred.
They were scanning over a lettuce farm. Lettuce doesn't flower. She'd been playing in a patch of clover earlier and was covered head to toe in pollen, so they went to her and signaled the others. Nothing mysterious about it.
But something mythic,
if you're willing to stretch the metaphor. Workers are of one tribe, be they robotic or human. That's an idea tech investors can latch on to.
Of course, investors, echoed Caldwell. They're always the target audience for your little publicity stunts.
Not always, but this time, yes, said Darhetty. Who do you imagine can change the fate of exploited laborers? Unless you got some genius plan to convince the average schmo to pay $30 for a head of lettuce. Maybe if we brand it artisanal and say it was picked by hipsters in hemp overalls.
Investment sustains the lopsided economy of modern farming. So counter-investment is a solution. I just want to abolish an inequity by any means necessary. Caldwell snorted.
As long as it's profitable.
Any truly sustainable solution is.
I know you, said Caldwell. This is your classic thin edge of the wedge approach to getting what you want. A minstrel show of altruism to help you weasel around labor laws and get more Macrodique automation on corporate farms. You're not looking to help migrants. You're looking to destroy their system of income.
It's a system that should be destroyed.
And replaced with what?
Still working on that, said Darhetty, looking out the window.
Don't you want to see kids like Rosalina?
Don't you say her name, snapped Caldwell. She's just a pawn in your game. Don't you pretend you give a damn about her.
Darheny's face went tight. His usual smirk puckered into a frown. I assure you there's a long list of things I care about, and she's on it, and comfortably above the median. Your heart aches, and you want to save her. I intend to save them all by winning the game.
You're just itching to play Great White Savior, aren't you?
Darheny's smirk returned. It's the best part of my job. And don't forget, I know you too. Don't you pretend you believe there's a shiny solution to every dirty problem. Perfect solutions are fool's gold, but progress is possible. Wouldn't you agree?
Ed, I find there's less and less I agree with you on.
That mansion you built in Lake Washington, said Darheny. That's paid for, right? I know you've been supporting some of your extended family, but they don't take much percentage-wise of what you have. The scholarship endowments you've promised to your alma mater, they could be tricky. Still, if you dip into your stock options, you can probably pull it off. If one or two kids from West Baltimore don't get a full ride to Howard, that's just the breaks, you know.
You are a manipulative bastard.
See? Said Darheny, adding his signature irksome chuckle. There are things we agree on. My point is, you can leave anytime you want.
Maybe I want to stay, replied Caldwell, and keep an eye on you.
Ah, as they say, keep your friends close.
There is something I want right now.
Do tell, said Darheny.
I want to hire a few employees.
Darheny reached up his sleeve and pulled out a tube of plastic. With a quick snap of his wrist, it unfurled into a rigid, brightly glowing tablet screen. I had a feeling you might. He handed Caldwell the tablet. I've taken the liberty of putting in for green cards and allocated a little green to expedite. There's a project just a few miles away, complete with sponsored housing, that should do the trick. Oh, and for She Who Shall Not Be Named, I have an idea for, let's call it, an internship opportunity. How's that scratch your savior itch? Caldwell took the tablet and shook his head.
Bastard, he said.
Again, the infamous Darheny chuckle. With the local harvest done, the Alvarez family packed their belongings and loaded them to a waiting bus. Rosalina said goodbye to the other children she'd made an effort to know, keeping in her mind the promise she made to Jay to try to have fun. They were all going to different places, and she'd likely never see them again. Still, it felt good to hurt a little, to realize she'd miss them. On the bus, Rosalina sat with her tablet. In the corner of the screen was a little circle. She swiped up, and Jay's face appeared. Many times she thought about tapping, about calling him to talk about what? What did she have to say to a man who lived in a big house and worked for a company that made, well, pretty much everything, as far as she could tell? She looked at his face for a minute, then swiped down. She dozed off, lulled by the bouncing bus, until her mother nudged her and said, "We're here." Rosalina stepped off the bus, rubbing her eyes. Instead of another farm with fields and tents, she stood before a house with a front porch and yard and new car in the driveway. She turned to her parents, confused. They were both smiling. Her mother had tears in her eyes. "What is it, Papa?" she asked. Her father crouched down to her and answered, "Home." The tablet buzzed in her hands. She looked at the screen and the picture of Jay filled it end to end. She tapped the image and Jay's real face appeared. "Hi, Rosie," he said. "I'm sorry I couldn't tell you before, but we decided to keep it a surprise. Your mom and dad are going to work for my company. There are some fields nearby where we're testing different kinds of farm robots, and I figured they had experience that could be helpful."
This is where you'll be living. A bus will come on Monday to take you to school, and there's a park nearby you might enjoy.
This is my house?
She asked. Jay nodded. For as long as you want. Rosalina began to cry. On screen, Jay wiped his eyes. There's one more surprise out back, he said.
She followed a brick path that curved around the house to a fenced-in yard. Next to a swing set was a tall black pole. It opened like an upside-down umbrella, and hundreds of silvery copters fluttered out. Rosalina laughed and ran into the glittering swarm as if she were jumping into a pool.
These are special ones, said Jay's voice from the tablet.
On screen, Rosalina saw not his face, but an image of herself, as if viewed from above.
The electric eyes don't just see ultraviolet, but the entire spectrum. Try out the controls.
Lines and circles like game buttons appeared over the screen. She moved one, and the entire flock rose. The image from their eyes showing dozens of neatly fenced yards all around the neighborhood. As she pushed them higher, she saw green fields in all directions, bordered by mountains with a hint of misty sea in the distance. A vision of a world wider than she had ever dared to dream. Jay's face bubble appeared again.
There are some experiments we'd like to try with these. I could use your help, if you want to.
Again, Rosalina found she could do nothing but cry. Her parents knelt down and hugged her. Her mother wiped the embarrassing drips from her nose. Eventually, she got hold of herself and looked back at Jay and whispered,
"Thank you."
"Oh, there's no need to thank me," he answered. "After all,
it's not a gift.
It's a job."